Anyone who has ever spent any time in Wisconsin's Northwoods, away from the light pollution from the big cities and the not-so-big cities, knows the awesomeness of a sky full of stars, billions and billions of them. And that awe-inspiring night sky was one of the reasons one of our guests chose to relocate, to move to northern Wisconsin and build a planetarium. That's right. He built a planetarium. It took 10 years and a lot of work, but now visitors and locals can go to Monaco between Rhinelander and Crandon and visit the world's largest handmade planetarium and learn about the stars being taught by the astronomy enthusiast who built it. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, June 4th. We will speak with the planetarium's creator, Frank Kovac Jr., this hour, as well as one of the co-authors of a new book about this astonishing feat. The book launch will take place later this month at the planetarium on June 18th, and we will get a preview this hour. And we'll welcome your questions and your comments at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So have you ever visited the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin? Tell us about that if you have. Let me welcome our guests. We are very happy to have with us Frank Kovac Jr., founder and owner of the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin. It opened in 2007. It is the world's largest handmade planetarium. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us. Also with us is Avi Lank, co-author with Ron Legro of The Man Who Painted the Universe, a story of a planetarium in the heart of the Northwoods. Avi is an essayist for Milwaukee Public Radio and was a reporter, columnist, and editor for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for more than 40 years. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Avi.
It's good to have you both with us. This is quite the inspiring story. But, Avi, you first. Why did you decide to take on this project? Why did you decide this was a tale worth telling?
I think anybody who stopped in and saw Frank, met Frank and saw his planetarium would understand what a unusual and really interesting creation he's made. And I did so. Ron, my co-author, Ron Legro, found out about it first and visited Frank first. And he mentioned it to me, and my wife and I went up and saw it. And as we were coming home, we looked at each other and we said, you know, there's really a good story there. There's a book there. And I had been experimenting. I'd been thinking about writing a book about some other things, but I put those projects aside, talked to Ron, and we agreed to collaborate on writing the story together. And we found Frank to be so helpful that it was, you know, writing any book is work, but this one was really a joy, especially because of the of how Frank helped us do it.
Yeah. So what stood out to you when you visited the planetarium?
It's such an unusual creation. You sit in the middle of the planetarium and it rotates around you. It's not most people would think of a planetarium where you go in, there's a big dome and a projector in the middle of the dome, and it projects stars up on top of the sky and it makes them move. Frank has created a planetarium. It's the largest rotating globe planetarium in the world and one of only four such planetariums. And you sit in it, and it rotates around you. And Frank has painted more than 5,000 stars on the inside of the dome in a paint that glows when he turns off the lights. He created them so they look like the stars in Monaco would look if you were actually looking at the stars without the planetarium. And then it rotates around you. It's hooked up to a motor that rotates the globe around you. It's such a fascinating and incredible thing that there was absolutely no question it was worth spending time and effort on to explain to everybody.
I wish that I had visited before. I have driven by that area many, many times. I'm very familiar with where this is, Frank, but most of my driving was before you actually built it. I'm going to have to visit now and see what it's like. Why did you decide that you were going to do this rotating globe planetarium, Frank?
Well, what I did is I first thought of my experience as a child going to the local Chicago Planetarium where I grew up in Chicago. And, of course, those are big city institutions, even the Milwaukee Planetarium is, compared to this. And I got familiar with that, and at the age of 13, my late father, Frank Kovac Sr., had a telescope, and that's where my interest was sparked, looking at the moon through that little refracting telescope. And then I thought, wow, you know, this is amazing. So I seen how my city where I grew up was not that big anymore when I started to realize the vastness of the universe. And then visiting that planetarium inspired me so much that I read lots of books. And then, of course, the series Cosmos with Carl Sagan started to come on TV back then. And wow, that really got me going. So then I eventually, on vacations up to this area, started to enjoy the night sky. And then eventually, after time in the military in Upper Michigan, I was able to settle in this area, buy some property, and then I could enjoy my passion of the stars. But it wasn't enough just to do that. I wanted to share it with others. And, of course, this is not the prime location for stargazing as far as the weather goes. So,
I mean, the stars are beautiful, but when you can see them, it's cloudy a lot.
Right, yes, and then when it is clear, it's wonderful. And, of course, planetarium is unique in that you can bring in people to learn about that, and, of course, in a way that looks pretty realistic if you do it right. So, of course, being able to do this, I had to understand the basics of astronomy, and my dad had a little rotating star map that I remember learning, and then I picked up on that, and that is where my idea came from. If you have a globe or a dome and it doesn't turn, of course you're going to need the projector to do that, like the modern planetariums, which are wonderful places. Yet to my thinking was, imagine a star map big enough to get a group of people into, and this one seats about 25 people. Then if you turn it, you can show the seasonal stars throughout the year, and then you can turn it off to stop the motor to show that. But, of course, we had to build this thing, which is approximately 4,000 pounds, before I could even think about putting the stars in there. So all this many years of work hinged on doing this with glow-in-the-dark paint, very fascinating. The experience is so visual, so fascinating, that I myself feel like I'm outside, and the customers are just awed at how this engineering feat and the image is so realistic that you can't imagine. So I'm just overwhelmed myself that I got this thing to work. It's a beautiful place to visit. Yes.
And this took what, a decade to complete?
The planetarium itself was about a 5-year project to get this entire 22-foot diameter, 4,000-pound wooden globe to rotate around the audience. The next 5 years from the beginning was 1997 to 2002. Then the next 5 years was 2002 to 2007, which involved getting the facility open to the public. And then there were people involved as far as approvals, plumbers, electricians. Anything needed for wheelchair access had to be approved. So that was a total project of 10 years, yes, for the whole thing, all the way to opening the doors in June of 2007. It's been 8 years now that it's been open.
And we have just a minute before we take our first news break, and then we have plenty of time after that to talk more. But right now, if I'm just driving down Highway 8, I can pull in and you'll show me you'll show me the planetarium, or how do you work visitors?
Well, that's not exactly how I would like it. I would like it to be that way, but I'm not quite there yet. I have additional employment, so I people call the phone number, and then when they call, they leave their name and number, and of course the planetarium is all online, and I will always confirm that with customers and let them know that there's a show sometimes 11 in the morning, sometimes 2 in the afternoon, depending on my other schedule. So that's very easy to make a reservation.
And it's Frank's too modest to say it's KovacPlanetarium.com, Kovac with a K.
Okay, yeah, we'll put a link up on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page as well. And after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, we will continue talking about the man who painted the universe. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about shining stars, the shining stars in the night sky, and the shining stars of Frank Kovac and his planetarium. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome your questions about the Kovac Planetarium and the effort that went into making it and the inspiration that went into making it. We'll also wonder if you, too, are fascinated by stargazing. Do you consider yourself an amateur astronomer? Do you want your children to learn more about the night sky? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Avi Lenk, who is co-author of the new book, The Man Who Painted the Universe, a story of a planetarium in the heart of the Northwoods. The book is about Frank Kovac Jr., our other guest, who is the founder and owner of the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin, which is located between Rhinelander and Crandon. It is the world's largest handmade planetarium, and as we heard, it's the largest rotating globe planetarium in the world. How did this come to be in little Monaco, Wisconsin? And what motivated Frank Kovac to build his own planetarium in the middle of the Northwoods? Well, that's what we're finding out about this hour. And we have a number of people on Facebook, Sandra on Facebook included, saying this is on my bucket list, people who want to check it out. Frank, I'm curious, how many visitors do you get? And I'm trusting you hope you will be getting more.
Yes, I get approximately 3,000 to 4,000 visitors per year, and about 80% of that is during the summertime months here, and it's what they call the vacation tourist season here in this area.
And are you, how to put this, financially feasible to have your own planetarium in the Northwoods?
I'm pretty close to getting to that point. It is if it's unique like this. You know, it's not a inflatable star lab like some of the schools use. Those are okay, too, but they don't inspire as well as this one because the stars in here are so much visually accurate is what I've heard from others.
Mm-hmm. But you are... go ahead.
We actually had the director of the planetarium at the UW-Milwaukee came up and looked at Frank's planetarium and... Jean Creighton is her name, was absolutely amazed at how accurately Frank had literally painted these stars on the dome of his planetarium.
Wonderful. And Avi, I know that there's a section in the book where you talk about this is a tourist area, and there's a lot of big things in the area, like the Hodag.
Right, and the world's biggest muskie, you know. There's a graveyard of old automobiles and stuff like that, but... There is nothing at all that approaches the Kovac Planetarium in terms of just plain interest and actually a scientific value. We've got a couple of stories in the book of people, you know, school children who have come, church groups who have come, and just been absolutely awed and inspired by the way Frank uses this planetarium he's created to inspire awe in them and to teach them about the world and the universe.
Yeah, and you want it to be more than just a tourist attraction, don't you, Frank?
Yes, of course. It's something that people take with them, children, adults. I've had visitors here, school children also at times, and they will go home and tell their parents what they saw and what they experienced. And I will have some of those parents comment on me that my child has shown me how to find a North Star. And that really touches me when a little kid is able to teach their parents the sky. That's always there. It's just that a lot of times we don't take the time to look up and see those stars. But, yes, I feel that it's more than just people visiting this and going away. They take something with them, and that's education, and that's excitement. And people of all ages I've seen, whether it's a little child or an older senior citizen, they walk out the door, some of them with tears in their eyes, some of them shaking my hand, some leave small donations, and they say, wow, this is so neat. I'm going to tell everybody else. And, of course, I found out that when you get a review online, that's important. And on TripAdvisor website, they're all 100%, and somebody asked me how I do that, and I say I don't run a restaurant, but there you go. You know, there's a difference there, but it's you got to be very good with people, and I feel I'm good with that. And you keep your place clean, get it, get people inspired, and then they'll come back. Many return visitors here.
Yeah. So you and I, Frank, share something in common. I learned from reading the book. I'm interested in the night sky. I enjoyed stargazing as a child. I decided in college for one of my science credits I would take an astronomy class. I thought that's right up my alley. I had taken a meteorology class as well, but I took this astronomy class, and it was so hard I couldn't believe it. I did withdraw from the class. It was way harder than I thought, and you did the same thing, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and that attempt was in the Chicago Adler Planetarium, and it was a course that I signed up for, and I didn't last about 2 weeks, and I told my parents I just want to look through the telescope, and I, of course, felt very overwhelmed, and I could see that I was nowhere near the intelligence level of some of these students as far as math and physics, but I had something else going for me. I felt that I was able to share what I learned by reading books and watching Cosmos and other things. And that is where I come in here to when people visit me, they really like the program because they say I keep it down to earth and very basic. If somebody wants to go higher than that, there's nothing wrong with that. They can delve right into the chemistry, physics, astrobiology. There's so many aspects of astronomy, and I feel that because of that, I'm able to touch people in a better way. Where one teacher commented, she took her children to a planetarium from this area on a whole day field trip to Green Bay area, and she says the kids were bored there. And I says, well, what was wrong? And she says that the planetarium show was too complex for the children. They were talking too much technical stuff. And I keep it at the level where you learn the stars, where are the planets, and, of course, I explain about the northern lights, the meteor showers, and I wrap in an hour-plus show I do. I wrap all that up for all age groups, and people just say, oh, my goodness, I never realized all this was there for me to see. I just never paid attention. So
you know, Frank had a particular challenge with the planets in your planetarium, didn't you, Frank?
Yes, the planets are a challenge because they change as they orbit the sun. Long ago, people referred to those as wandering stars, now the word planets. So how do you do the planets in a planetarium that doesn't have a projector to adjust them? Well, what you do is you have these little circles that glow in the dark, and you adjust them onto the interior globe to where they should be week to week, month to month, year to year, and I have overcome that, and it works very well there. And of course, the stars being so distant in our lifetimes, those will be fine. If this planetarium is still operational in 2,000 years, someone will have to redo the stars and move them about an inch everywhere, and I don't know if they'd even bother.
Yeah. That reminds me, Avi, that the you wrote about the location of Monaco being so close to the 45th parallel. Do you remember that story?
And yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, Frank, this was more serendipitous than planned.
Right.
Monaco is right near the 45th parallel, and in fact, it's probably the 45th parallel, as it appears on the maps, is not exactly halfway between the equator and the North Pole because the Earth isn't exactly a sphere. It turns out that where Monaco is, which is a little bit north of the 45th parallel, is actually more precisely halfway between the North Pole and the equator, which, as Frank is trying to recreate the stars in Monaco, provides probably the best template you could get for showing Northern Hemisphere stars, because you're seeing everything equally in both directions. So that was another thing that sort of happened in a very nice, but I'm not totally convinced, planned way. And I think there were a lot of incidents like that when Frank was building his planetarium. For example, he has a neighbor who was apparently a pretty good metal worker who was able to help him a little bit with some of the metal components of this thing. Frank is a real good carpenter and a real good planner, but apparently you needed some help from your friend just a little bit to mold the metal. And there are also some tools, I guess, you inherited from your father that lasted just long enough to get the whole thing put together.
Yeah, and you almost had a 2-ton rotating globe fall on your back, Frank.
Yes, I had some close calls, and I knew this project would be risky, and I had the testing phase of it was to see if it would rotate in releasing the support straps that held it in position at the 45-degree angle to match our latitude here is how I have to turn it to be accurate to this area. That was where the accident occurred, but I came out okay, and of course I pressed forward. It was something that I love challenges, and but that was almost a setback, a sort of a setback there, but it taught me a lesson that, you know, be careful and press forward and you'll get there. So it worked out.
We are talking with Frank Kovac Jr., founder and owner and builder of the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin, and Avi Lenk, who is the co-author of a book about this feat, The Man Who Painted the Universe, a story of a planetarium in the heart of the Northwoods. Have you ever been to this planetarium in the heart of the Northwoods? Do you have any questions about the building of this planetarium, about what you can learn in this planetarium? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. And Frank says he can also talk with us about features of the night sky, and we can maybe talk a little bit about what we can look forward to seeing in the summer night sky. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, Frank, why did you choose Monaco, Wisconsin? Why that particular location?
It was kind of an accident in a way how it happened. As a child on vacations up in this area, up toward the town of Eagle River, I got to experience summers away from the big city, and that's where the sky was appealing here because you don't have the city lights to block out the view. And then, of course, as I got old enough to save a little money, I wanted to buy a piece of property in this area. So it was my first trip away in a little car with my younger brother and drove up this way, and we looked around. I was 19 years old and looking for a piece of property at that age. You get quite a few looks from people, and I thought, well, maybe there's something that I can find, and it happened to be that there was a piece of property in the Monaco area that wasn't on a lake. It was just in the backwoods, and I thought it was perfect for getting away from the lights of any town and looking up at the stars. And that's where how it all began, and it started out with basically my telescopes. I have telescopes, one that I designed, not designed, but built from a design, and I actually was able to enjoy that. But then that was kind of unique how that turned out to be on the 45th parallel location, basically, for this future project that I, at that time, had no idea I would ever do. You know, it was something that came later, you know.
Yeah. So
there was another bit of serendipity in Frank actually building or buying his land in Monaco, and that is when it came time to build his planetarium, it turns out that the building regulations allowed him to do so there with very little red tape in Oneida County, where Monaco is located. But if he'd been in Forest County, which what, Frank, is about 2 miles down the road, right?
About a mile. It would have been about a nightmare, yes.
Right. If he'd been a mile further east, there are the regulations in Forest County are much stricter. So this is yet another one of these interesting coincidences that allowed this project to go forward with and Frank to fulfill his vision.
Oh, and that reminds me, too, of the story in the book when at one point the bustling big city of Crandon wanted to, update and renovate its downtown, including street lighting. And Frank, you convinced them to go forward with a street lighting that would not disturb the night sky.
Right. I went to some of the town meetings and I convinced them that it would be best to put in lighting that did not shine up into the sky. And I don't have anyone that disagrees with why do we need to throw lights upward when we want them where we can see. So they were able, it wasn't the best lighting they put in, but it was better than what they would have had I not spoken to them about that. And some of the other local towns like Rhinelander, they listened to some of my talks about lights, and now going forward, any new lighting they put in will be shaded or full cutoff fixture, where the light up inside the fixture instead of shining out in your eyes. So that's something that I think people really want to protect, is our beautiful night sky that is so precious. And this is one of the last parts of Wisconsin where you can still see the Milky Way in all its glory on a clear moonless night.
Yeah, well, good for you. Anita in Rhinelander has been to your planetarium. Hi, Anita.
Hi.
You've been there more than once.
I've probably been there about six times. My family has been there probably four times, and it's just, there's no words to describe it. It is just fantastic. Frank does a great job, and every time you go, it's different. He doesn't have the same show. So, you know, he's just a very informative guy, really knows his business, and not only that, when you get stuck in the snow, he pulls your car out.
Yes.
Well, that's really nice. Is this a friend of yours, Frank? No, I'm just teasing. I mean, so you do these in the winter as well, Frank?
Yes, show times can be, you know, any time of the year, and of course, it could be a cold, snowy day, and inside this nice, heated facility, you can come and enjoy the night sky showing here. So I remember you, Anita, and I know that you were very inspired, and to come back six times, I guess I must be doing something right.
Thank you, Anita, for calling. We have news coming up from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will continue talking with Frank Kovac, the founder and owner of the Kovac Planetarium in Monaco, Wisconsin. We are also talking with Avi Lenk, who is co-author of a new book about Frank and his planetarium. It is The Man Who Painted the Universe, a story of a planetarium in the heart of the North Woods. We welcome your questions about this effort. We welcome your experiences at the Kovac, or for that matter, any questions you have about astronomy in the night sky. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We're talking about the stars and talking about reaching for the stars, as our guest did, one of our guests, the builder, the owner of the Kovac Planetarium, located in Little Monaco, Wisconsin, between Rhinelander and Crandon. We are talking with Frank Kovac Jr. and the co-author of a new book about this tale, The Man Who Painted the Universe, The Story of a Planetarium in the Heart of the Northwoods, Avi Lank. And we welcome your questions. We do have open lines for any questions you might have about this astonishing tale of a love for astronomy turning into the building of a planetarium in Wisconsin's Northwoods. The world's largest handmade planetarium, the world's largest rotating globe planetarium. Plus, we can talk about things in the night sky, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. There will be a book launch at the planetarium coming up later this month, June 18th, at the planetarium in Monaco. And Frank, are you going to be during that book launch? Will you be showing us the night sky too?
Yes, at times. Due to the fact that it's probably going to be, where the people might be coming and going, and may be able to have many, many little showings due to the fact that you have to open the door and you can't let the light in to see the stars if you do that. So otherwise, yes, if somebody was interested to see not just the stars in there, but the creation of this planetarium, which most people find fascinating also, the perseverance that went into it, the creation of the how it all works, and then the visual beauty of the stars in there, how they're all hand-painted one dot at a time in there. So,
yeah, talk a little bit about the hand-painting of that. That's not the first time you painted a part of the universe. Didn't you paint your childhood bedroom ceiling with Saturn or something?
Yes, I did a wall mural of Saturn, and it was inspired by the TV show Cosmos. Carl Sagan approaching that. So that was kind of my beginnings of enjoying seeing space-type stuff,
Yeah, and so Carl Sagan was a mentor? He was your inspiration?
Yes, he was. My dad was my first beginner there, giving me the chance to learn about the sky with a telescope, and then, of course, that TV show came out, and Carl Sagan was one who was able to portray it in a very simple way and for the general public to really catch on to the excitement of astronomy. And now, of course, with a new astronomer in New York there, Neil deGrasse Tyson, he's got the newer series, which is a more high-tech now with the computers. We can make shows a lot more visual, but all in all, it's all basically very inspiring, all of it.
Yeah, and yeah, your dad would show you the night sky through the telescope, the cosmos and the TV shows furthered your interest. And then it was a trip to the Northwoods, a vacation where you actually saw a night sky that you had never seen before.
Right. There were some shorter trips to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, near Yerkes Observatory, where I was also inspired, and that's mentioned in the new book here. And then the Northwoods is where the stars were more pristine because it's much more remote here,
Yeah. And did you see the Northern Lights too? Wasn't that a jaw dropper for you?
Oh yes, that experience there was thinking, wow, I have to move up here someday, and I did for that reason too, because of the awe-inspiring sky. Not just the stars, but the aurora borealis along with it.
So, can you explain to me, Frank, in a way that I'll understand? And remember, you're talking to somebody who dropped out of their astronomy class. What exactly are the Northern Lights?
The Northern Lights result from solar plasma from our star, the sun. Of course, I explain to people that the closest star, our sun, throws off energy constantly, but once in a while there's a big burp of solar flare activity that is called magnetic storms. Once that energy in about 18 hours hits Earth's atmosphere, it wraps around the poles of Earth, causing that visual display of electrically charged energy from the sun, energizing in the oxygen and nitrogen in our atmosphere, causing the greenish, reddish, which you can't see from the cities due to the fact, unless they're very strong because of the lights. But out here, and especially north of here, if you go up to Alaska or Canada, you'd see them just about all the time. Whereas here, they're actually a treat to see, and they were visually nice about a month and a half ago, and I was able to get a special camera to photograph them. So yes, that is inspiring. If you've never seen those, you would be amazed.
Yeah, I saw them for the first time when I was a child. We spent a lot of time in northern Wisconsin. My parents retired to a place up there. And it was, they actually frightened me the first time I saw them because I didn't know what it was. I'd never seen anything like it. And I haven't seen them since. So that's, I hope that my trip up to see your planetarium this summer will coincide with a sighting of the Northern Lights. Michael emails, I took my children to the Kovac Planetarium a couple of years ago and have recommended it to many friends ever since. I was very surprised at how realistic it looked, even though it's painted. My kids really enjoyed it, and I hope to be able to take two more groups of kids this summer on our way through Monaco to our family cabin. Well, there you go. So, Frank, how did you get it to be so authentic, so accurate?
Well, that was the next challenge after building the planetarium. How do I get the stars to look as accurate as possible? And that was because of the shape of the planetarium is designed into the grid pattern of a star map. So you would have the hour and degree lines, where on Earth we call them longitude and latitude. In the sky, astronomers refer to them as hour and degree lines for like GPS navigation. So there is how I was able to get it probably 90% accurate to visual. More paint for brighter stars, less paint for dimmer stars. And the Milky Way was lightly sponged on with the same luminous paint. Luminous glow paint can be cheap or good, and I, of course, made sure I purchased the really good stuff that glows for most of the day after giving it about 15 minutes of illumination with any kind of lighting. It's just really dramatic, and that took me about 5 months, if you average 8 hours a day, to hand paint each and every star that you visually see out at night.
And, Avi, you write in the book, fortunately, the self-taught inventor had the patience and resilience of a Thomas Edison, for whom endless trial and error likewise was indispensable. What do you mean by that?
Well, it wasn't just as simple as building this globe and then painting the stars. Not only did Frank have to be sure that he painted them correctly, and he's being too modest, according to the people we had who came and looked at the planetarium, it's more than 90% correct. It's much closer to 99% correct. And the one real challenge is that he only had white paint. So some stars are a little blue, some stars are a little red. But the positioning seems to be completely correct. But then he had to figure out what kind of material do you put on the inside of the globe that's going to take the paint, then how do you put the paint on there so it's going to stay? And this is after he'd had not only did the globe collapse on him once, it actually, a sort of prototype of this thing, he actually had two collapses before he was able to get to the point of painting on it. And the other thing that one would find fascinating and really appreciate the kind of creative effort Frank put into it, if you walk into this planetarium and it's just in the natural ambient light, and you go inside it and you look up, all you see is white. You don't see the glowing stars until he turns off the light, because the directions for the paint said put the paint on a white background so that when you turn it off, the only light coming off will be from the stars. It will be from what you've painted. So when you stop and think how how difficult it must have been, one, to figure out where the stars should go, and then two, to paint them with white paint on a white surface so that it came out correctly. You can sort of understand how an awful lot of trial and error went into this, never mind that you had to rough up the surface in the appropriate way so that the paint would hold.
Yeah, and Abby, you also, the book refers to Frank as a Wisconsin original, but I thought he's from Chicago. Why do you call him a Wisconsin original?
There's a lot of people from Chicago who've wised up and understood that they really should live in Wisconsin, and Frank is one of them.
That's good.
I won't ask him who he roots for in football if he pays attention.
Who do you root for in football, Frank?
Yeah, actually, I'm not a football fanatic, but I do like the Packers.
There we go. And we're almost out of time. Abby, you also call Frank the sole proprietor of the business, S-O-U-L. That has double meaning?
Yes, it has double meaning. I was mostly I reported on business during my time at the Sentinel and Journal Sentinel. And one observation I was able to make over the years was that the most interesting, and it seemed to me the happiest, business people I ran into were the folks who started an enterprise because they were really fascinated by what the enterprise did and were only secondarily motivated by making money at it. They were good enough business people so that when they found their passion, they could make it pay. But they didn't start doing something merely to make it pay, merely to make money. And that describes Frank. Frank found his passion, and what he's trying to do is find a way that he can pursue his passion and find a way to make enough money to pursue his passion. But he isn't trying to make money first. He's trying to pursue his passion first.
Yeah, well, there's a broader message there, too. We're out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Frank Kovac. Go ahead, Abby.
Frank, I'll see you in about a week.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you, Joy.
Yeah, thanks to both of you. There is a book signing at Boswell Books in Milwaukee on June 15th and a signing event at the Planetarium on June 18th. Thanks to Caleb Lato and to Christy Taylor for producing the program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.